For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show and I'm Tim Fuel, back with a slightly shorter show as we head into the festive period and have an early finish. Joining me via the power of the internet, former manager of Hendon, Harrow, Borough, AFC, Wimbledon, etc, 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 Mr. Dave Anderson. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Tim.
Well, it's nearly here, Dave, the time when managers prepare their availability bingo cards. How different is your Christmas going to be?
Oh, so much. So different. You know, what people... It's good fun for spectators, I was thinking, supporters at this time of year, because even I'm going to go to a game Boxing Day, but, you know, so it's all good fun. You have a few beers, go and watch a game. The crowds go up, which is brilliant. As a manager, I always found it a stressful and busy time. A couple of reasons. One is games come on top of each other, so you're going to play three or four games in a period that a Premier League manager would want 2 months to play, you know. So you're going to have all that. You're going to have guys who are semi-pro who will sort of have their Christmas dinner with their family. Of course they will, because that's what it's about. Will socialise and do the Christmas party stuff. And I would say in today's football, the lads probably are more aware of their games than if you go back into the good old days where you used to cross your fingers and hope that everybody went all right and would weigh in at sort of Boxing Day and especially New Year's Day. So for all the managers out there, they'll all be very wary of the next 10 days. They'll want them out of the way, football-wise. I know for the family and Christmas and all, that's great. But in their football season, they want the next 7 to 10 days to pass without any major incident, injury. And there tends to be funny results around this time as well, Tim, you know. So I always found it a stressful time. The last sort of two Christmases, and I think this might be my third one, without being a manager, I've really, really enjoyed. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I was looking at the fixtures for the Bostic, the Isthmian League, and I think in the Premier they've got a game Saturday, they've got a game Boxing Day, they've got a game on the Saturday between Christmas and New Year, and a game on New Year's Day. That's four games in, you know, just over a week. And you're asking a lot from people, because not everybody even gets, you know, a lot of people are, you're trying to get hold of people today, has been almost the biggest frustration of your life, because everybody's broken up for Christmas. But most of the lads that are playing non-league football, they're in jobs where they might only get Boxing Day off, and then they're back working. And it really is a tight time, isn't it?
It is, and it's... and obviously, you know, you've got to... You know, the lads who are married and have families, and, you know, even if you're not married, you know, it's a time when you want to be with your family, and especially if you've got kids, you know, it's a great time of the year. But there's big sacrifices made at our level of football. I know they're made at higher levels, but I think they get paid more. And you know, there comes a sacrifice. So, but at our level of football, there is massive sacrifice made at this time of year by semi-professional footballers, staff, managers, referees. Don't forget them. And I'm sure that it must have caused one or two family arguments over the years at this time of the year because of that, because short period of time off work and you've got to fit in four football matches, you know.
Yeah, well, and if you make the family away day, that like the Boxing Day game, we were discussing with some of the older supporters the other day at my club about when games used to be on Christmas Day as well, and all the family would go to a Christmas Day game. The world's changed, obviously, but you know, hopefully my family will be making it down to a Boxing Day game. But we've got a 1 o'clock kickoff, so I don't know if that helps or frustrates that family side of things.
Well, are you talking about Christmas Day games? I mean, still in Northern Ireland, there's a very famous trophy called the Stealing Sons Cup, which is a sort of the lower level sides, you know, the reserve teams and amateur sides would enter. It'd be a bit like the FA Vase, the equivalent in Northern Ireland. And the final is still played on Christmas morning. It's a real sort of tradition. And you're, as for myself, I mean, I can assure Harrow Borough that the bar takings will be going up at Harrow on Boxing Day, because I'm going with a few of my mates, and to be fair, there'll be a few beers getting bought. So, and then we'll go on to a big family do. But and I think as well, Tim, you know, going back the years as a manager, when you, the, especially the Boxing Day and New Year's Day fixtures, the crowds would go up and you would see people that you wouldn't see the rest of the year that make an event of it, that bring the see lots of families and, you know, going for a few beers before the game and watching their local team play. And that's brilliant. And I hope that tradition is still around, and I'll get a look for it myself sort of on Boxing Day. The New Year's Day one, I used to pray for snow on New Year's Eve, because that obviously that would be the one that you'd be worried about what sort of condition your team would be in. And I swear this is true. I remember at Wimbledon, my father-in-law is a retired police officer, and he found this old breathalyzer test that he'd had for years. And I took it into Wimbledon the week before New Year's Day, and so says, "There it is, guys. Come the morning of the game when we report, I'm going to be breathalyzing for you at sort of random. You know, we'll select who it is and we'll breathalyze them, just as a threat to sort of, you know, to try and get under their skin a little bit before they went out New Year's Eve." Came in New Year's Day. I tested Steve Butler, who I would bet money we had a few drinks the night before, and it failed. The breathalyzer, it was so old, it just everybody came out sort of as if they hadn't had a drink, and the lads were in hysterics. And I think we lost. We either drew or lost to, might have been Chipstead or someone like that, a real sort of poor performance. But I had no evidence to prove they'd been out, and they won that one, if you know what I mean, the dressing room lads.
Oh, well, old school dressing rooms, yeah.
It was old school, yeah.
Big news this week that the Gosport Borough takeover has finally gone through and a new team are heading the club. It's certainly come with experience and a track record of turning clubs around. With immediate effect, Ian McInnes takes over as chairman and Ray Stainton becomes CEO, with the former chairman who came in over the summer, Ian Selstrom, he takes on the role of vice chairman, and he's been instrumental in bringing McInnes and Stainton in. McInnes was instrumental in saving Portsmouth from the threat of extinction and then led the transition to a fan-owned club and became chairman prior to the takeover recently by Michael Eisner. Stainton has been involved with football throughout his life, an ex-player and a board member at Waterlooville FC, who then managed the merger when they become Haven and Waterlooville FC. And he also had a period as a CEO under John Gregory at Portsmouth and was involved with McInnes turning around the fortunes of Pompey. So certainly sounds a great team heading up their stuff down at Gosport now, Dave.
Yeah, it does, and yeah. Listen, you can't buy experience. Well, you can't buy experience. That's wrong. But it's good to have people of that experience around you when you're trying to do something at your football club. You know, I sincerely hope it goes well. You know, you get fed up with bad news stories, don't you? You know, so it'd be good to hear a couple of good ones.
Yeah, and it looks like they're local guys as well, and so they hopefully understand, you know, that the local issues. You know, Gosport's not too far from Portsmouth as well, so that, you know, maybe there's some links with potential sponsors and bringing those on board. The statement from the club reads: "Remaining in the Southern Premier is imperative this season as work begins to improve the facilities at Privet Park and develop the on-field capability." So whether that means change in manager. I know Mick, friend of the show, Mick Catlin's in charge there at the moment. Has been struggling to buy a win this season, but I think with so many other things going on off the field, as we've spoken before, it's so difficult to focus your players, isn't it, and get the right players in.
It is. It is. You know, people say that players should just get on with playing and managers get on with managing, but realistically, a football club, if it's not right at the top, it does feed its way down in the dressing room, because it makes people uneasy that they're aware of the situation, and any little sort of anything that takes any of your focus away from what you should be doing is a negative for the team. And you know, everybody, the big saying these days is the 1%ers. You know, what can make you 1% better? something like that going on around your football club as a manager sort of is like minus 1%ers, you know, it starts to take away from what you're trying to do, you know. So stability, you know, more times than most, stability really is the foundation for you to build success, you know, within the dressing room. I mean, stability at the football club, and then the dressing room feeds off that, and there's a calmness around where it isn't chopped and changed. Everyone knows where to stand. You don't need any guarantees because they're all around you. You can visibly see that the place is okay, and that helps, you know.
Yeah, and other news this week. Obviously, we recently spoke about the new management team coming in at Southport. Kevin Davis as number one, and John Dreyer was his number two. But an announcement this week from Southport that John Dreyer has stepped down, citing difficulties combining the role with living in the south of the country. I hadn't realised he was making that commute up to Southport, but yeah, you can understand maybe if that was the situation as to why it might just become a bit too burdensome.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I didn't know John, you know, Tumble as he's known, and you know, the lads know Tumble Dreyer is his nickname. And you know, I didn't know he was living in the south. The one thing I do know, and I came up against him when he was at Maidenhead, and I always got on well with him. But the one thing you got off him, there's an honesty about him, Tumble. You know, he's very straightforward, straight down the line, you know, black and white guy. And if he felt, which it seems he did feel, that it wasn't working, and obviously it's very tiring as well, Tim, to commute to that them sort of distances a few times a week.
Tell me about
that,
it.
Well, yeah. Well, there's nobody knows more than you do with where you lived or where you work. But I do. Well, then you would certainly understand what I'm saying. It's it would drain you quickly and take all the enjoyment out of it. But for John, once he got to the stage where he thought it was detrimental to the team and to Kevin, then he would stand down because that's the sort of guy he is.
And a quick mention of the trophy results, obviously at the weekend, and some replays this week as well. Kidderminster Harriers knocked out holders York City and now host Stockport County in the next round. Haywards Swifts beat Hampton and Richmond Borough 3-2 in the replay midweek and set up a last 32 tie with Maidstone United. I'm sure Wildstone will be looking forward to hosting Hereford after Wildstone beat Wingate and Finchley in the last round. And Hendon as well, Gary McAnside had a great result down at against Bath City at the weekend, and now they travel to Sutton United in the next round. Unfortunately, our luck ran out. Last week's guests, Taunton Town and Haringey Borough, they both lost. But perhaps we have some psychic powers, because the winners from both of those ties have ended up pulling each other out of the hat. So Bognor Regis Town, who beat Taunton Town, now host Leighton Orient in the next round, who beat Haringey Borough.
Yes, and you know, Haringey Borough to lose sort of gnarly to a team like Orient is not a real sort of feather in their cap, and they'll have enjoyed the experience, no doubt. I think, you know, Hendon, brilliant result, and oddly enough, it's funny how things happen. I remember when I was at Hendon, we beat Bath City away in the FA Cup to go into the second round. So just come back a minute, and you're saying Bath, but Hendon beating Bath at home. We haven't spoken to Gary for a while. We'll have to get Gary on soon, you know, because he's having a good season. And again, it's a club that, you know, they've ground shared for years, and I managed it myself, you know, before they left Claremont Road. But it seems to be settling down, and that stability coming back, and you know, Gary being in charge for the length of time that he has, you know, and again, they're going to be in and around the playoffs. So that's all good news for them. Hampton and Richmond losing to Heybridge. Heybridge beating Hampton. I think it was laid on the winner of it off the top of my head. Brilliant, brilliant result, because Hampton and Richmond are having a really good season as well. So that's a That's a big scalp for Heybridge to have. And in many ways, in a couple of weeks, it might be a good thing for Hampden because it'll let them focus. The old saying, they can focus on the league, but they're right up there in amongst the playoffs. So, and some good ties to come out now. Orient, I've given them a kiss of death by predicting that Justin will turn them around and move them up the league, but he'll want to stay in the trophy because you just want to sort of build some momentum to him, you know.
It's again, and last 32, you know that you're within touching distance of Wembley as well, isn't it? So as every opportunity.
Yes, and we'd have to say that is Wembley Stadium and not Wembley the football club. You start to dream, and that's why we all love the game, because you get to dream about it when you get this close to it. It can be distracting, and as a manager, you try and keep the lads focused on just deal with the next game, but it's instinct to sort of just to naturally dream about going somewhere like Wembley.
Okay, some interesting news that made national news, both on websites and newspapers, and I'm sure it's going to attract some more attention as the coming weeks go. News at Wembley FC are pretty much at the threat of bankruptcy because of a trademark dispute with the Football Association over the club's logo. Wembley FC of the Spartan League have been playing at Vale Farm for, as long as I can ever remember, and have previously registered a trademark in September 2012 for their new club logo, but the FA have taken legal action, and a European decision has now ruled in the FA's favour. And to tell us a little bit more, we have chairman of Wembley FC, Mr. Brian Gumm, who also has been at Wembley FC as long as I can ever remember as well. Good evening, Brian.
Good evening, sir. You're quite correct there. I've been there for the last 30 years.
From what I remember, you pretty much built the club as well, didn't you?
Well, we tried. We've done our very best, like every non-league club does. And in 2012, we thought our dreams had come true. Budweiser had come in and offered us a deal to make a series called Dream On, which we thought was absolutely wonderful. And then basically what we left everything to Budweiser because they just come in and took over. They done a redevelopment of the clubhouse, etc. And it was all supposed to be about non-league football. It all had to be sanctioned by the FA because it was a conflict of interest, because we actually are in the FA Cup and with Budweiser sponsoring us, etc. They took me up to the Wembley Stadium to meet the managing director and all the team. We went through a few things. They come back and they said that, you know, you've got to change your logo. So I said, why? We've had the logo for years. And they said, no, because the FA requests you to change your logo. They sold it to me at Lycan Centre because they said that the Man City person who designed their badge would design our badge. We'll give you all new signage all around the ground, etc., etc. And that's what happened, basically. So that was great. Everything went well. We kept our side of the bargain. The 3 years was up. Budweiser pulled out. The managing director of the FA, the chief executive, he actually come down and cut the ribbon for Budweiser, which is on episode 5 of Dream On. Everything was running smooth. Everything I thought was fine. And then till 4 months after the deal had passed, everything, we didn't see no problem. And then we get a nasty letter without prejudice on it, of course. And I get a load of paperwork in Chinese, etc., etc., which I don't read Chinese, telling me to sign it or else. So basically with that, I had to take legal advice. Budweiser didn't want to know. They just said, no, sorry, we can't help you. It's a legal thing. You have to get your own solicitor or barrister, which is trademark barrister. You can't have a normal solicitor or barrister, which cost us a lot of money to get advice, but we got advice. And apparently, when Budweiser done the deal, they signed everything over to us, and we own it for another 8 years. I then contacted the FA, and they said, you've got 4 days to sign this. I told them quite blatantly that you know, I'm not going to sign it. The trademark belongs to us. It's all legal and above board. We've done nothing wrong. Budweiser's done everything correctly. And I'm not going to sign it. And I said to him, if you want to buy it off us, I ain't got a problem with that. I said, if you give us a, tell us what it's worth to you, we'll sit round the table and we'll discuss it. Never heard no more. And for about a year. And then the BBC rung me up and they said to me, how do you feel about losing your trademark? I said, I don't know what you're on about. I haven't lost no trademark. They said, yeah, you have. They've gone through the back door and they've actually filed the complaint and it's been overturned by the EU. Well, I said, this is news to me. Well, lucky enough, we had, if they never notified me, it would have all gone through now and it would all have been done and dusted. But we had a 1 month left to appeal, which I had to take a legal advice again, costing the club a lot more money, because we now have to have a trademark barrister. They told us that Budweiser's barristers, trademark barristers, should have told us what was happening. And if we had put in a counteraction, then this wouldn't have gone that far. But because Budweiser never told us, I didn't know any different. That's why I found out afterwards. That my trademark lawyer got on to the Budweiser people after messing us around for nearly 2 weeks, actually got back and said they didn't know, they didn't contact me. They've actually admitted it in an email. They didn't contact me because they didn't know any phone numbers or how to contact me, which we all know is a load of old baloney. So basically, that's where it stands. So I filed a complaint against the FA. We've tried to talk to the FA in the meantime to tell them that, you know, sit around the table, let's discuss it. I've been told all different things. They're saying it's to do with Brexit, with the trade deals, etc. Because I didn't realise we were registered in so many countries. We've got Emirates, we've got the Chinese market, we've got the American market, we've got Poland, Croatia. We've got about 8 or 9 different countries that we're registered in. But they only wanted the China market and the American market at the moment. So I said, well, what's this detail now? What's actually happening? What they've actually told us now, it's like a knock-on effect. It's a rubber stamp thing. Once they get it passed in one country, they can go to the next country and the next country and the next country and finally take over all our trademark in all these countries, which we've got apparently got 9,000 items that we can list with the name of Wembley where they can't because they've been refused entry because it's already been registered in our name, even down to boot polish, bras, socks, everything. So basically, that's where it is. But I've also been told that we have to pick up all their costs. I even have to pick up their costs for their appeal, which they've won in the EU court. I've got to actually pay that bill. Now I've appealed it. If I lose the case, I have to pay that bill. And if they go to another country, I have to pay that bill. If they go to another country, I have to pay that bill. So basically, it turns out that if this is the case, we can't afford to do that because you're talking thousands and thousands of pounds. We've actually asked the FA if we could actually file our name in the UK. Would they be against it? They've not got back to us. So therefore, it means to say that if they're not getting back to us, as my barrister said to me, if they're not getting back to you, it means to say they're going to appeal it. So it's going to cost me about £3,000 to appeal it. They'd appeal it, and then we'll lose it. That'd be another £3,500 down the drain. And then we've got to change all our logo signs, all the Wembley names around the club, all our shirts, everything to do with Wembley will have to be wiped off our list, which is absolutely ludicrous. As I say, I've been there 30 years. The club's been there since 1946, and I don't know what it's all about now.
That's basically why we wanted to get you on, Brian, and obviously we've only got your point of view, but we haven't been able to speak to Budweiser because of the time, and we're trying to get hold of the FA, and all we have seen is the FA statement that says that they take the enforcement of our intellectual property seriously and only take action as a last resort when an amicable resolution doesn't seem possible. We're going to follow this up. We're going to try and get some more, but we wanted to feature it because it is one of those things that as a non-league club, You saw the potential of, you were dangled this carrot, and every other club in the land would have taken this carrot to try and get your publicity. I mean, I'm a lawyer by trade originally as well. From what I've seen, you do have trademarks on many, many items around the world, but it's not like the sort of thing that you've been exploiting, is it? I you know, I've moved away from the area, but I haven't seen sort of when I was at Wembley the other day, I didn't see many street sellers touting Wembley FC merchandise. Are you trying to, you know, exploit this loophole?
I understand what you're saying, and we haven't used it because we've only just set up our shop. But we have got people buying it in Australia, and we have had people buying it in Italy. I know it's not. We're not going to be as big as obviously as Wembley Stadium. And that's why I was quite happy to sit round a table and talk to them.
Do you know what? Do you know what? Sorry, Brian and Steve. This is typical FA in that respect, that they make a decision and hide behind a closed door. I've seen it a million times, and this could actually be the FA putting a team out of business, you know, because of the cost of it. I when I seen the clip on TV, Brian, I actually put on Twitter, this is the equivalent of eating your young. This is the equivalent of eating your young, because it's an absolute disgrace. I don't even know what words I want to use. I've got to be careful. Obviously, this goes into the public. I'm not worried about me. I mean, I'm so angry that I couldn't find the right words without swearing. You know me well, but I just think this is a disgrace. And if someone has made this decision, the very, very least they could do is make themselves available for the likes of us, for the BBC, for whoever it may be, and state their case. And they'll just hide behind it.
I couldn't agree more, because at the end of the day, I mean, they're our neighbours, for Christ's sake. I mean, I can see their ground from our ground. I mean, it's not like they've got to travel a million miles, or nor have I got to travel a million miles to sit round a table with them and have a discussion. But they won't do it for some reason. I mean, this has been going on now for nearly a year and a half, and they've gone through the back door. And as I say, it's absolutely wrong. We had Budweiser brought all the stars down there, Keown, Ray Parler, David Seaman, Terry Van.
Yeah, I remember, Bran.
What club wouldn't have taken that offer from Budweiser? Yes. Everyone's saying to me, well, you shouldn't have got involved with Budweiser. Why? At the end of the day, I thought they was a good company and they would do everything properly. And I thought the FA would do and play ball as well.
So where are you now, Brian, with timescales and that? What do you need to do, or are you just sitting tight?
I've got one more month now to appeal my appeal. And that's how it goes. And it goes to they can either take the appeal out and then sit round the table with me, but they've got to take that out before they go round the table. Or they keep the appeal going. They've now put in an appeal against my appeal, and then it goes back to the courts, and the courts. If this is just principle on my part, because I don't think we should be bullied by this crowd. I mean, we're associated to them. I pay to be a member of the FA. Well, like all non-league clubs, they're there to protect us, not ruin us. They come out with all this rubbish about not looking after grassroots, and they tick all the boxes, and we've opened another centre here for the children. We run 7 youth teams. We do all our part. So why are they doing this to us? I don't understand it. Why? They waste money every week. So what's the why? Why? I just don't understand why. I really don't.
Well, let's see if we can find out a why for you, Brian. We'll follow this story. I promise you I'll follow this story, and I'll hopefully we'll get you back on, and hopefully we'll be able to help you find a resolution. But really appreciate you coming on and giving us your story. Obviously, we will try and speak to Budweiser and the FA and get their stories as well. But
I think they should be helping us now, not hindering us. And by the way, tonight, I just want to say thank you to all the people out there, because someone set up a petition only an hour ago, and we've got 2,500 tweets. And I think that's marvellous to show that people do care about non-league football, like I do, as I wouldn't be in the game for 30 years if I didn't.
I know you wouldn't be in the game, because I've seen the pain on your face in times gone by, Brian, and you know, it's people like you that keep non-league still ticking over. So you know, we need people like you to keep going.
I can say that. We do try, but this just makes you feel that is it worth it? Why are we doing this? Getting up, going out with the kids Sunday mornings, and etc. Why is it worth it? Do I need this aggravation? I want to go home every night and sleep. This has just been worrying me sick. We've worked hard around the club for the last 30 years, and to think all that hard-earned money that we've spent is either going to be wasted or I've got to dip in my pocket and pay out more. Why? For nothing. And this is what I'm saying. It belongs to us. It is ours. So why should they come and take it without paying anything for it? It's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. And it just takes away your... the little bit of stamina that you have to keep going, it just hits you right below the belt. And I just feel so gutted that this has all happened. I really do. Budweiser as well, because they did look after us while they was there. And it started off with Dream On, and now it's like a nightmare. It's just unbelievable. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you very much. I know you've got things to do, and I appreciate your call. And if you let me know, I'll appreciate that too.
Well, let's see what we can find out for you, Brian.
Yeah, we will, Brian.
Appreciate you giving your story, and we'll try and find out what we can and try and get a resolution, a happy resolution.
Obviously, we haven't had been able to speak to Budweiser or the FA. We will do. Don't worry. Even if they're on Christmas holiday, they're going to give us some sort of answer.
Tim, hang on. Before you go any further, how many times in our 12 years or whatever many years we've been doing this, you know, that's one of them statements that comes up time after time you've just made. We haven't had anybody from the FA to speak to. How many times have we said that? The FA aren't available for comment. Do you know, it just seems to be we've said it over and over and over again. They're never, ever available to... they're like...
they're not the fifth emergency service, but I've even texted people on their personal mobiles this evening. So they will answer me, and we will get resolute. But just leave that sour taste in your mouth. You know, I'm sure we discussed this all came about, and you know there was a lot of publicity around it, and then other following seasons we've had, you know, ex pros turning out, you know, way past their retirement for publicity for insurance companies or somebody. So there's lots of money flying around and everybody's benefiting, but perhaps not non-league. That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I just think this one could end up being a horror story, in as much as how can the FA defend themselves for putting a football team to the sword, and that's really what it could end up with. Yeah, who's going to get to defend that? You
and
know,
the disappointing thing is, it's not even as if, you know, Brian and the pounds a bit. Well, it's Brian and Jean, his wife. They make everything happen at Wembley, but you know, it's not as if they came up with this idea to make some money. To we'll register a trademark, and we'll. It was part of this get up that was presented to them, and you know, sort of it was all good, all going to be for the benefit of the FA Cup sponsor at the time. And from the outset, Wembley FC weren't looking to profit from it. It was just one of the byproducts of it, and it really could backfire badly, couldn't it? But I'll follow it up over the Christmas period. So you know, apparently they're not all on shutdown at the FA. I'm not sure about Budweiser. We'll try and get their story as well, and come back to this one, and hopefully get a good resolution for Wembley FC and also for non-league football. Okay, so as well as managers coming and going, unfortunately, most weeks we find ourselves reporting on clubs struggling. One of those mentioned in dispatches in recent weeks, Market Drayton Town of the Evo Stick South. Managers out, managers in, chairman out, and then an emergency crisis meeting of fans. This week, there was some good news. A new manager, well, actually a former manager, back, and a new chairman who has lots of non-league experience as a manager. Does that make sense? I don't know. Probably not. But hopefully the new manager at Market Drayton Town, Martin Davis, who joins us on the line, can help us make sense of it all. Good evening, Martin.
Good evening. You all right?
I'm good. So you're back at the club you love, but can you give us a brief rundown of what's been going on there this season?
Before that, I've had nearly 18 seasons there myself, starting as a player, and then sort of getting a manager's job, whether it was through luck or judgment. You know, I got the job and did very well, and this season we started very well. We were 3 points off the playoffs, and playing some great football with a really good side. I thought we'd comfortably make, you know, top 10 this year, which would be a record for us. And then out of the blue, I got the sack, you know, and it's documented people know a lot of the background, what happened. It was a little bit, you know, done a bit in a funny way, and perhaps in the wrong way by some people's eyes, but in people's eyes maybe the right way. But listen, I got a sack, and, you know, 8 weeks later, it hasn't worked out for me, and the chairman's walked, and the other manager's walked, and, you know, and I simply can't leave the club like that. You know, I'm local to the place. I live 2 minutes in the ground. I'd committed to other stuff, but, you know, when they came back for me and I'd found out they'd been restructured, certain people had gone. You know, I wouldn't work under certain people, that's for sure, but they'd gone, and I thought, you know, I can't leave them like this, and I certainly believe the club will be fine again now, but, you know, we'll see.
So all of that, you did come back because, you know, once a club's in your veins, it's there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's easy for people to say, I love this club. You know, I heard that from a few people that had been there, you know, 12 months, 18 months. You know, you can fall in love with the football club very quickly, the atmosphere or the people or whatever. But to deeply love a football club, you know, that was in me. I've been there. I signed for the football club in 1999-2000 season. And it was under a former name of Little Drayton Rangers at the time. And, you know, in that time of playing, I scored 296 goals for them and played over 800 games and that kind of stuff. And, you know, that's all sat down blowing me on trumpet. I'm not. It's factual. You know, that's in there. And once you do that for a football club and you go through two or three leagues, win numerous cups, blood, sweat and tears, you know, it's like you say, it's in my blood. And I felt that way when they asked me to go back and I felt I couldn't turn it down, really.
So is everything, because there were some pretty serious crisis meetings, weren't there, amongst the fans as to whether the club would even survive. Is it on an even keel, as a stable footing, or at least looking towards that way now?
No, I think it is. I think it definitely is. One of the problems with Market Drains has always been people helping out and supporting and things. Like we're not a massively supportive club. We could be better. And hopefully every cloud has a silver line, as I say. Maybe this is give locals a kick at the back, so we need, you know, come on, this football club needs, you know. Help had been dwindling and support been dwindling, but, you know, I know what goes on behind the scenes and has been for a long time, and, you know, I hear everything about the football club, who's saying what, who's doing what, where the finances are. I believe the club will be fine, because one thing we are, and that's one thing I always preach as a manager, we're a good social side. You know, we all have a beer, we all have a laugh, we all have a social function, and that's massive at this level. Anyone that says it isn't is lying to you. You know, you've got to have that social side. If you can get the social side running well, get the support through the gate, the club will look after itself. But I'm confident the club's going to be stable. You know, only the next few weeks and months will tell that story, won't it?
Yeah, and I mentioned the new chairman, Paul Moore. I mean, he's got great experience as a manager at non-league level. Does that mean it's going to be a very close working relationship between you two?
Yeah, we started really well. I mean, you know, I spoke to him on the phone, and one of the reasons why he wanted to come in was he wanted to get me back. He said, I'll get him back and I'll definitely come in. And, you know, someone that's got experience, probably unlike previous chairman or any previous chairman at the football club, really. He understands what it takes to manage at that level and how hard the job is. And I think you're kind of in between at this level. It's not a kick about your mates and do okay. It's not fully serious, you know, travelling over the place. It's kind of in the middle. And the workload of some managers, me in the past, has been massive, you know. And Paul understands that. And he also understands the business side of it. He's got his own business. So I think we'll work great together, you know. And I'm not saying it's, oh, you start your business, I start your business. I'll help him when he wants with anything he wants. I've been talking a lot longer than anybody else. And if he wants to help me out with something, I'll listen, you know, and that should be a good relationship, hopefully, yeah.
So, I mean, it looks good now on the field and off the field. Because, I mean, looking at the table, there's only one down from the division this year. And you're 17th yeah. out of 22 on 20 points. So you're comfortable, yeah. but not safe. I mean, is the idea this season to get through the season and then build for next term?
I think it has to be now. I think, you know, you're constantly reassessing. Every manager will tell you this. You're reassessing all the time. You know, teams that perhaps are low in budget have a great run, all of a sudden they reassess and go, hang on a minute, we're flying here, you know. Or teams with big budgets say, hang on a minute, we'll cut the budget, we're not doing very well. You know, it works. Football's such a funny game, as you know. And, you know, I think my aim was to get into that top 10 for the first time in our history. Now, I'm confident we would have done that with the team that I had assembled. You know, let's be realistic here. Let's just stay in the division first. You know, let's try and finish second bottom at least. But I don't think we can do better than that. And I'm confident we will do better than that. But ultimately, stay in the division, like you say. You know, you build and you go again. And I think we're in a good position to do that again now.
And those players that you did have at the start of the season, are most of them still there, or have they flown the nest and you're having to rebuild again a little bit?
Well, when I left, I think that was one of the reasons why it was such a strange sacking, because they didn't understand that at this level, when managers leave, players tend to move as well, don't they? You know, and when I left, surprisingly, all the players really should often decide to leave as well. They said, we're not having that. You treat them like an idiot, so we'll walk away. And fair play to lads for doing that, but I didn't encourage them to do that. I wanted the best for the club, and I said, look, lads, stay and play if you want to. They didn't want to. And I've said to all the lads now, most of them have come back to me and said, look, if you're back, we're back. Two or three have committed elsewhere, and I respect that, and I've got to act on that, and we have brought other players in. But yeah, I mean, most of the players that I had have already said they're coming back, or already are back, so, you know, hopefully we'll hit the ground running now. You know, sometimes when you build a team, it takes a while to gel. Hopefully, fingers crossed, with a lot of lads coming back, that they should know this game pretty well, it shouldn't take long to build. But yeah, you know, hopefully it'll go well this weekend and moving forward with those players.
So, this season, beyond this season, you know, where could Market Drayton Town go? Is this your level, or would do you think? I know you're a small club, and it's difficult to get extra support in, but could you go up to the next level?
I think realistically, as it stands at the moment, no. I think we are at our level, and we actually, a lot of people in our area and in the West Midlands say we're punched above our level, really, for what we've got. Not a lot of support, small budget, but we've always got certain ethics and morals that we stick to, and have always got us, you know, mid-table's fantastic for us. We finished 11th and 10th past two seasons, 50 points twice in a row, that's brilliant for us. To progress, every manager will tell you, you know, a bit more money, you know, a bit more scope to bring in a couple of star players. I think Market Drayton could push top 10, top 6, but to go into the Eversick Prem, that's a big ask. You know, that's financially, again, even more travelling, more time, and that'll be difficult. But I think you look at some clubs that have done it, started Eversick and gone right through to the Football League. We all dream of it, and don't get me wrong, I've thought about it, what if, but ultimately, you know, we just got to take it one step at a time, and with Paul and the new committee and the new people involved, and hopefully get a few more through the gate, we can just look to stabilise, and then every club wants to do better and go on. But we shall see. Watch this space, as they say.
Well, hopefully, every cloud has a silver lining. The fact that you've got plenty of publicity around the difficult times will hopefully swell some of the local support and get them following you. And we wish you well. It's good to have you back, and we'll be following the story. And thank you for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for this week. Thanks, Dave.
Pleasure, mate.
And thanks to all our guests, and of course for listening. Don't forget, you can find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, also on iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio. And if you want to put the podcast on your own website, check out www.nonleaguefootballshow.com, where you can grab an embeddable player for free. Have a great Christmas, one and all. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.